Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh man, sometimes you just have to laugh at the Pravda media. But what kind of like Russian Soviet style media do we have, not just in this country, but in this state of Montana? Now, it's bad enough when you have these fake news outlets like the Daily Montanan, which is, you know, funded by these far left billionaires like the foreign financier Hans-Jörg Wies and other, you know, out of state interests. But then when you have the TV stations continuing to double down on the far left biased coverage that didn't even help them win a Senate race here in Montana. I mentioned this after the big elections earlier this month. I said, you'd think that the Montana media might have a reckoning and they might say, God, you know, we were so biased against, you know, Republican Tim Sheehy in this Senate race, and yet we lost big. You think they might have a reckoning and say, hey, maybe we should be a little bit more objective. Maybe we shouldn't just be so in the back pocket of the Democrat Party or of the radical left. But nope, here they go again. Here they are. I pulled up some of the headlines over the weekend, and the Montana Television Network has this big story glorifying the Northern Plains Resource Council and the climate kids who were behind this radical, crazy Held v. Montana lawsuit, the climate kids lawsuit. And they're just glorifying. They're trying to make these people look like they are freaking heroes. And what do these people do for Montana? What do they do for you? Nothing. Their entire existence is to shut down your job, to shut down your businesses, to shut down the industries that fund your schools. If you guys heard my conversation last week, I had the Signal Peak Energy CEO Parker Phipps drop by our Montana Talk studios. $6 million they are giving, thanks to Montana Coal at the Bull Mountain Coal Mine, they are given $6 million to build a hockey rink in Billings. Did they get the heroic coverage and attention for this $6 million, you know, gift that they're giving? They barely got mentioned in the article. They barely got mentioned in so many of these news outlets. The news outlets made you think that the city of Billings made this happen. No, it was Montana Coal that made this happen. But yet here they are glorifying the Northern Plains Resource Council, making these guys look like heroes, the very people that are attacking the Montana economy, that are attacking your way of life. But Parker said something very, very important. You know, when you go watch Little League games, do you ever see the MEIC or the NPRC on the back of those jerseys? No, you don't. Because they don't do anything to help your communities. They only exist to attack your communities. Such a great point. And yet here's the liberal media doubling down as they try to make these far left wackos look like heroes. Wait till you hear, this one's hilarious. Wait till you hear this story from the liberal blog, The Daily Montanan, about the Montana Supreme Court. I'll start there next.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, this story is just hysterical. Just hysterical. I read the headline, and then I read the story, and I was like, what kind of Kremlin crap is this? What a joke. I had to read it three times just to make sure. Am I really reading what I think I'm reading? I had to send it to a friend and be like, did these guys literally do their own survey? And then now they're claiming, oh, look at how great we are. We did our own survey, and we're great. We're fine. Nothing to see here, folks. That's basically what they did here. Greg in Great Falls, stand by. You're our first caller here. We'll get to your phone calls in just a second. 406-294-0970. If you want to call in, if you got something you want to talk about or you want to jump in on the conversation, we've got phone lines open for you right now. So the Daily Montanan is this, you know, AstroTurf, left-wing blog. But what happens is these mainstream media outlets will say, ooh, here's a liberal news source. We'll copy and paste it and put it into our websites or in our newspapers and let people think it's actual journalism or it's actual news. And they're funded by these left-wing mega donors. But anyway, here's the headline that they published here just a few days ago. State bar poll. High satisfaction with Montana's Supreme Court. Basically, so here we go. Let's see. Judges and court staff who work every day in the state courts took a biennial anonymous poll put out by the state court system itself, and the results showed that nearly 9 in 10 of the respondents approved of the job the Montana Supreme Court is doing. John Mudd, the executive director of the Montana Bar Association, said the survey was consistent with previous years and showed that the overwhelming majority of those who work with the courts most often see the state's highest court as both efficient and largely consistent and clear in rulings. Here's the kicker at the very end. The survey response rate was 35%. So here you go. You literally have basically the Montana Supreme Court and the Montana Bar Association, two radical left-wing outfits. We conduct survey. Survey says people like us. We very good, according to our own survey. I mean, what kind of Kremlin crap is this? And then they got the Pravda media amplifying this to make people think, oh, yeah. Yeah, Montanans are very happy with the Montana Supreme Court. What a joke. Absolutely hysterical. Into the phone lines we go, 406-294-0970. We got Greg in Great Falls first up. Greg, what's going on?
Hi, Aaron. I appreciate your taking my call. I've been concerned for years about an issue with the GSA and DSA departments of the DOD, and I don't know if they still exist. It was GSA was General Services Administration, and the DSA was a Defense Services Administration. And I would like to see DOGE look at those two agencies, because I had an experience back in just after Reagan got into office. He started an FWA, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Program, to identify fraud, waste, and abuse. And I was a logistics NCO at the time. And I was working in food services here, and I was supplying food service equipment for the missile sites that we had. And I received an order in, and it was for a three-quart, one of those aluminum saucepans that had the U.S. stamp on it and all that, and I had 20 of those come in, and the price on them was $47. And I thought, well, this is pretty expensive, so I started checking it out, and the one quarts were like $5, and then it went up to, you know, two quarts were like $8, and $10 for the three quarts. You know, it went on up in price, and the bigger ones were like, I think the biggest one was, and it wasn't that big, but anyway, when these three-quart saucepans came in at $47, I started checking it out. Back in that day, it was back in the early 80s, I looked at the microfiche. We had microfiche that we could go in and look at the pricing on this and see who was buying it, and it was Army, Navy, Marines, and Air Force were buying them. And I looked at the pricing, and you could see who was buying all these things, and they were $47. And I looked at it, and I went ahead and reported it to the Fraud, Waste, Abuse Program, and they kicked it around for about a year and a half. And then they came back to me, and, of course, it was crickets. You know, I didn't get anything from it or anything. And then finally they came in, and he says, oh, yeah, we've recovered $234,000. We got a refund on that.
Wow.
So, because of what you identified. Yeah, and I found all the records. I found the record on it and everything, but they didn't, you know, and, of course, at that time, they were giving out, like, 10% of the recovery costs from the company that they sold them to. And I thought, well, this is kind of weird. And I thought, well, you know, they did drop the price down the year later when we received the next microfiche. And I thought, well, this is kind of weird, you know, and I didn't get any money or anything like that. So I turned it over to OSI, which is the Office of Special Investigation. And I guess maybe somebody over there got the money or something like that.
That's incredible, though. Yeah, I got to run to the break here. But look, this is what's so great about this DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, that Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk are going to tackle. Is they're going to go in and find this fraud, waste, and abuse in every department at every level. And look at and they're seeking your help, just like what he just described right there.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
That was a great story from Greg in Great Falls, talking about how just a responsible citizen looking at some, you know, pricing here can say, wait a minute, why are they charging this much for this thing? I know how much those things cost. And he sends it up the flagpole, and then boom. Ends up getting $230,000 of taxpayer money back. Imagine how much can be done. But this is, you know, what Greg basically did back then is what this DOGE, this Department of Government Efficiency, is calling for you to help with right now. If you have ideas on which government programs can be, should be eliminated, or if you have examples of fraud, waste, and abuse, they're basically going to be crowdsourcing this, which is where they're asking for you, the public's help in doing so. Let me see. Oh, there was a news story that tied in. Here it is, because he was talking about, you know, just waste within the Pentagon alone, for example. I don't know if you guys heard this story. Mike Emanuel had this report for Fox News just a few minutes ago. The Pentagon has failed its seventh audit in a row, which is concerning for any business, but especially for the Department of Defense, which has $3.8 trillion in assets and $4 trillion in liabilities. So, yeah, they've failed their seventh audit in a row. And Vivek Ramaswamy, who will lead DOGE along with Elon Musk, are telling Fox News that inefficiency in the DOD and other government agencies exists because they have no accountability. Adding, quote, I think part of this is exposing for the public the extent of that rot and waste. All right. Let's see. Oh, on another front, we had a lady call into our show, and she just left a message for us. I was hoping she might want to actually speak on the radio. Cecilia and Laurel, if you do, give us a call right now, 406-294-0970. We've got phone lines open for you and the rest of our listeners right now. But Cecilia and Laurel left a very interesting message. We've got Caden Bjornstedt, guest producing for Travis today, as Travis is enjoying a day off. And she left this message. She says, the talk about deportation reminds me of the Civil War and how the South stood on the stance of our economy needing slavery to keep our economy moving, much like the left is doing with the deportation discussion. That's a very interesting analogy. So the Democrats, back during the time of the Civil War, yeah, they were saying, oh, no, they said that they thought we needed slavery because it was good for the economy, and that if we did the right thing and did away with slavery, that it would be bad for the economy. The Democrats are basically making a similar argument today. The Democrats who wrecked our economy with the mass illegal immigration of the last 3.5 years, of the inflation and everything, they wrecked our economy. They wasted all sorts of our money. They're still wasting our money right now as we speak, giving your money to illegal aliens and to all these other countries. But now some of these Democrats in Congress are claiming, well, we can't deport all of these illegal aliens because it will be bad for our economy. It will wreck our economy. It's like, you wrecked our economy, but now you're saying if we fix your mess that that's going to wreck the economy? Well, that doesn't make any sense. And then they're saying, well, it's going to be too expensive. We can't afford to deport these illegal aliens. Well, we can't afford to keep them here. And oh, by the way, you had no problem. You didn't tell us that we couldn't afford to fly illegal aliens all across America and then hand them debit cards and give them housing and give them hotel rooms and give them all this other free stuff. But oh, now you're saying that we can't afford to ship them out of here. It's so absurd. But what an interesting analogy from Cecilia and Laurel. Thanks for that call. Let's go to Frank in Kalispell next up on the phone lines. Frank, what's going on?
Hi. Yeah, this is Frank from Evergreen, excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to talk about RFK Pelz. Now, for 10 years, he's had a brain worm munching on his memory and redacting a lot of the memories, but he was a extreme leftist activist that wanted to shut down the Keystone Pipeline, was arrested for it, lots of other activity. Has he forgotten that he's really a left-wing radical? I mean,
well, it kind of reminds me of John Fetterman, the senator out of Pennsylvania. It seems like, man, he's making way more sense now than he did before his brain injury, right? It's kind of odd how that's working out, huh?
Yeah. Well, take care now.
All right, you too. Thanks for calling in. Yeah, what is the latest here from John Fetterman? There were a few headlines that were standing out, but basically, I think he was sounding a lot like Bill Maher on HBO. Bill Maher was criticizing kind of the woke transgender agenda and criticizing the Democrats for not focusing on everyday issues that matter to you know, the American voters. I think John Fetterman has basically been criticizing his party in a similar fashion. Next up on the phone lines, we got Mike in Big Timber. Mike, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, Aaron. You know what? I believe what's happening with these Democrats is that yellow toe fungus has got to their brain. Question I have for you is, have you heard any news about the Senate race in Pennsylvania? It seems to be, you know, the recounting is going on in four counties over there, and I was just wondering if you have any update on that.
Yeah, they're doing McCormick has such a big lead that there's no way that race should be overturned. McCormick, the Republican, is the winner and I think will be at the end of the day. But did you hear about how they're counting invalid votes? They're counting illegal votes, the Democrats are.
Yes.
And they've openly acknowledged that they're counting invalid votes.
Right. And then that woman from Bucks County said she doesn't care what the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania ruled, that, you can't count those things. And she says, I don't care about that. The Supreme Court, is being defied all over the country. So we're going to do it here. That's the kind of mentality these people have, Aaron. They don't want to give up power. And if it's 53-47, does that count McCormick as one of the 53?
That does count McCormick as one of the 53. And then I was talking with Ashley Smith Thomas earlier this morning, and you've basically got six squishy Republicans in the Senate with McCormick not being one of the squishy ones. So 53 minus six, I went to journalism school, so you got to do the math for me on that one. you know what I'm saying? And so, but you take 52. And then minus six, and then, you know, they're in a more precarious position. So, hold that thought. Stay with us on the phone lines here for just a second. I'm going to play a news story because some folks may not have heard this news yet. So, Mike, stand by because I'll come back to you in a second. But, yeah, Pennsylvania Senator Bob Casey is still refusing to concede defeat to Republican Dave McCormick, despite the Associated Press calling the race in McCormick's favor. Speaking on Fox and Friends First, McCormick campaign strategist Mark Harris attacked local Democratic officials for counting ballots that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled were illegal.
It's quite frankly unconscionable that these counties are engaging in this behavior. And so that's why we've been very clear from the beginning about holding them accountable.
Now, the close finish in the race has led to a state-mandated recount. It is set to be finished by November 26th at noon. So anyway, there you go. That's the basic gist of that story there to Mike and Big Timber. Mike, anything
else? If that's the law in Pennsylvania that there's a recount triggered automatically due to the parameters of that law, that's fine. But let's not be counting, illegal or ballots that aren't supposed to be counted. But that's what they're going to do, Aaron.
Exactly. They're already doing it. They're already doing it. Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Well, it's crazy. Aaron. All right. Hey, thank you. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's always fun to get your phone calls because I've got a million things I could talk about, but we want to know what you want to talk about. And you get a chance to be heard all across Montana. Let's take you to Butte, America, Butte, Montana. We got Mike in Butte. Mike, thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you, Aaron. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I didn't know if I'd ever find a subject that upset me enough to call you, but the situation was, it was in the headlines in the Montana Substandard newspaper over the weekend that the government, thinking of Doge, is going to subsidize SkyWest Delta Airlines instead of $975,000 a year to fly into Butte twice a day. They're increasing it to $7.3 million for two flights into Butte per day. And so the federal government's going to subsidize that. And they said that it's due to labor, fuel, and other cost increases. That's mind-boggling. I'm so glad that Elon and Vivek are going to look into things like this. But that was a front-page headline in Butte. That's mind-boggling, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's part of the Essential Air Service program, which has a lot of support here in Montana, because that's why, frankly, why Cape Air is able to fly. You know, that's why folks in Wolf Point, Havre, Glasgow, Sydney, Glendive, why they have air service into Billings. And so, but yeah, they ramped it up significantly for Butte. They already had some Essential Air Service funding so that you could have some flights, to the bigger cities and those bigger connection flights. But they ramped it up significantly right before the election, didn't they?
Yes, and I had, Cape Air to fly to Havre. I've done that before. In Sydney, we need that. And, yes, we need support. But to go from $975,000 to $7.3 million, I'm not so sure. So there's not
All right. Well, I'll tell you what, if they're still giving our money to fund drag queen story hours in Ecuador, we could fund a lot more Essential Air Service programs in Montana. I'd love to have a Billings to Kalispell flight. Hey, you know what I'm saying? But maybe we take that out of the Drag Queen Story Hour budget, right? Appreciate the phone call, Mike. Great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
We all get benefits from tax dollars, from the roads we drive on, the firefighters who protect our houses, and the courts and police that keep us safe. So why don't we make taxes voluntary? The answer is the well-known free rider problem. People will not voluntarily pay for things that they enjoy, whether they pay or not. If everyone tries to free ride on the backs of others, it all breaks down. The solution, compulsory taxes, is as unpopular as it is necessary. But the free rider problem pops up in other places as well. One of them is housing regulation. The solution to housing unaffordability, to build more housing, is not welcome in many parts of our state, especially at the neighborhood level. Let those other places become more densely populated, some might say, while we keep our big lawns and quiet streets. And if we free ride on other communities' efforts to boost housing stock, we get the best of both worlds. Except that if every community thinks like we do, nothing changes and the crisis gets worse. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
What are we going to talk about in the week ahead on Montana Talks? Man, I tell you what, just the news we've been talking about already. President Trump rolling out his cabinet picks. It's like watching the NFL draft, as Lara Trump pointed out. Plus, we've got the Montana Farm Bureau Convention about to be underway right downstairs from our Montana Talks studios. We'll be taking your phone calls and much more. So a big week ahead with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk Monday through Friday right here.
This is where Montana Talks ag.
with Lane Nordlund.
President-elect Donald Trump has been announcing nominees to fill cabinet positions in his upcoming administration, but the name of a Secretary of Agriculture nominee has yet to surface. While names are being floated, there's still a lot of uncertainty. Agricultural policy expert Randy Russell with the Russell Group.
Number one, I think that you will see somebody that is strongly supportive of production agriculture, kind of putting production ag back in the seat at USDA, whoever it is. Number two, it's going to be somebody that I believe has had production agricultural experience and I think also has run something. President Trump is real big on having people that are governors, state departments of ag head, experience running businesses, et cetera. So I can't tell you who it's going to be because I don't think anybody knows at this point. A lot of that also comes down to you got to look at other cabinet posts, geographic diversity, male, female balance in the cabinet. So I think it's just too early to tell. But I do think there's going to be a heavy emphasis on putting production agriculture back in the seat in the Witten building.
During Trump's first term, the incoming administration held off on an agriculture secretary choice until just before the inauguration. Again, as of this broadcast, no one has been named as a nominee to serve USDA in the Trump administration. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got a great guest just about to join us here on the show. I don't think we've had him on since the election, so looking forward to catching up with James Brown here in just a second. Real quick, I got some messages that came in on the Montana Talks app. So now you've got Democrat members of Congress who are saying, oh, we're going to wreck the economy if we get rid of all these illegal aliens. They don't want all of their help leaving the country, I guess. They don't want to actually pay Americans American wages, so that's why they're freaking out that Trump's about to deport all these illegal aliens. And then they're saying, you know, so, oh, well, we're going to wreck the economy. Oh, we can't afford to deport the illegal aliens. Fred in the Flathead sent us this message on the Montana Talks app. If we're worried about losing workers because of deportation, we can replace them with working age citizens who we have been paying to not work. Great point there by Fred in the Flathead. Jeff in Victor says this. There was a question of where the money was going to come from to remove all the illegal aliens. Use the money we are paying them to live here. Housing, welfare, health care, and food stamps, not to mention cell phones. And I see new pickups and SUVs everywhere that I can't afford, filled with immigrants. Use that money to send them home. If it's going to wreck the economy, they have been able to cross and work on temporary work visas for years. It's not fair to those that have become citizens legally and spent tens of thousands of dollars to do it the right way. Thanks to Jeff and Victor. Some dude in Bozeman said this, the libs are right. We can't afford to round up the illegals. The libs spent all the money bringing them here. They're going to have to tax you into slavery now just to pay the bill. That was from some dude in Bozeman. All right, let's see. James Brown. He is the president of the Montana Public Service Commission for just a little while longer, and then he'll be sworn in as your new state auditor or commissioner of securities and insurance. James, hey, congratulations on your big victory. By the way, I had to pull up the numbers here. You got 61% of the vote. The governor's race got called at 8:03 p.m. on election night, and you even got more votes than the governor. But don't tell him I said that, okay?
Yeah, I won't. I won't. Good morning, Aaron. Good morning to your listenership. Yeah, I would say that I won bigly on Tuesday, November 5th, as you stated. Got 61% of the vote as the second highest vote getter among candidates on the ballot this year, only behind Christy Jacobson.
the Secretary of State and received 358,000 votes. I want to give a special shout out to two counties in Montana that backed me with over 90%. Good folks in Carter County who went for me 92%, and the good folks in Garfield County who went for me 96%.
Wow, 96% in Garfield County. That's incredible. That's awesome. I haven't even done a county-by-county look to see how well Donald J. Trump did in some of those eastern Montana counties. I know he's gotten, you know, 70-something, 80-something percent in the past. And so I'm assuming he did even better this go-around.
Oh, he did. Yeah, absolutely. I did very well. I won 51 of the 56 counties. I even won, much to my surprise, honestly, I even won Gallatin County and Lewis and Clark County. The one county I can't seem to do very well in any of my elections is Missoula County, but we know what happens in Missoula County.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I was sitting next to the numbers man in Evan Wilson, great guy, you know, our friend Evan Wilson, and I call him the Montana numbers man because he's been so accurate throughout the 2024 elections. But, you know, he keeps a close eye on Missoula because there are thousands and thousands and thousands of conservatives in Missoula. They're just vastly outnumbered, but there's still a big voting block, which is why it's still so important that conservatives, spend their effort getting their message out. But yeah, I mean, you know, conservative candidate, if you get 35% of the vote in Missoula County, you're doing well. So that's where that one sits. Well, before I ask you about a couple of specific things that I know are going to be on the agenda that I know you're going to be trying to help fix here, what is your agenda for the state auditor's office as commissioner of securities and insurance?
You bet. Well, the number one agenda for me is, as you know, I grew up in rural Montana. And I know how underserved rural parts of the state are with state services. So I want to get the agency out of Helena and into small rural counties, particularly eastern Montana and particularly on the reservation, so people know what the actual work of the auditor's office does. As you stated, it regulates insurance and securities in Montana. But a big part of that is to protect consumers from fraudulent practices in the state, particularly our vulnerable populations. So that's number one. Number two, I'm actually calling from Denver, Colorado. As I stated during my campaign, I knew I'd be able to hit the ground running in this job, and outgoing Commissioner Downing, who's now Congressman-elect Downing, invited me to come down to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners meetings to meet everybody. And I'm pleased to say that the national meeting of insurance commissioners will be actually held at Big Sky, Montana this summer, June 22nd through 25th. And the reason for that is that the incoming president of the National Association is the North Dakota Insurance Commissioner. So that's pretty exciting. And it dovetails with what I was talking about, getting people to know what exactly the auditor's office does.
We might have to come join you, do our show live from that event or something. Good excuse to go to Big Sky for a day or two or something like that, especially in the summertime, although the winter would be great too, don't get me wrong. First off, before I get to the state auditor job here, you know, a lot of people credited you with really making some improvements at the Public Service Commission as president of the PSC, and can't we all just get along? You got people working together well. So I know, first off, hats off to you for that effort there. What's the PSC going to look like now with you moving on to the state auditor's job? How do you see the seat shakeup taking place there?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. One of my highest professional achievements, I believe, is when I was sworn in as president of the commission in January of 2021. That agency was fundamentally broken. As you noted, there was a lot of infighting between the commissioners and staff, and it was not a well-run agency. And I turned that agency around with the help of my friend and colleague, Commissioner Fielder, and we've really done some quality work in making that a model state agency. So going forward, we actually held new commissioner training for the two new commissioners that are coming on, Brad Molnar and then Jeff Wellborn, who ironically enough went to high school with down there in Dillon. And, we just sat down with them and walked through all the changes and improvements we've made at the agency, and told them that really the key to maintaining a healthy agency culture is for the commissioners to get along, which wasn't happening 5 years ago. So I think we put that agency on a good track, and it'll be interesting to see who becomes the president of the agency. That vote will take place on Tuesday, January 7th. The way that that works is the commissioners pick from their colleagues and peers who will serve as the agency president. I've made my opinion known. I think Vice President Fielder, Jennifer Fielder, should be the president, but we'll see if that is the vote.
All right. Well, the two topics I wanted to cover when it comes to the state auditor's office is, one, the left is trying to force climate change concerns into every single decision out there, not just at the PSC, but also when it comes to insurance rates, deliberately driving up costs. I want to get to that. Plus, why are we paying rates based off of California? So we'll get to those two things next. Ditto.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, just huge. James Brown getting 61% of the vote for state auditor. And then Christy Jacobs, the Secretary of State, I think she got 62%. Governor Gianforte, 60%. What a massive mandate for Republicans here in Montana this past November election here. James Brown, the incoming state auditor. Jim, yeah, I'll just throw both of them out there. The left is, they're trying to force climate change concerns into every decision. They're trying to do that through the Held v. Montana lawsuit. They're trying to force it on the PSC through the liberal courts. But they're also trying to do that when it comes to insurance rates as well. That's one issue I wanted you to bring up and address, how you can push back on this effort. Because to me, this is how they are deliberately trying to drive up costs across the board. They use Green New Deal policies to drive up energy costs across the board. Now they're trying to inject climate into every insurance decision as well, which will just force up the cost of insurance on people that are already seeing massive spikes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is why elections matter. And I can tell you the way that I confronted this at the PSC, I mean, we had this climate change garbage, I'd say, come right before us, as you know. We had some of the environmental groups petition the PSC to have us start regulating global warming, climate change as part of our decision-making at the PSC. As you know, we basically rejected that, and the way that we did that, which was well within the law, is we posed a series of questions to these groups saying, what authority does Montana PSC have to regulate climate change under Montana law? And they literally refused to answer the question, and so their petition has died because they refused to participate in their own process. And I can tell you that at this national insurance conference that I'm at right now in Denver, this is one of the topics that is being discussed, if you can believe it, among the 50 state commissioners. Really fascinating for me is that I was looking at the future conferences for this association, and they have a conference called the Building Tomorrow Together Conference, which will be held in Kansas City June 2nd.
Oh,
and I love this. Yeah. I love this. In the prints below it, they have formerly the DE&I conference, Diversity Education and Inclusion Conference, and they changed the name literally after the November elections because they know that the DEI label is a cancerous label for them.
That's freaking hilarious. So DEI is dead. The woke agenda is dead, but they're going to try to resuscitate it by calling it another name. Wow, fascinating.
Yeah,
the other big issue is, and I know you've raised this concern. I think I first read about this in the Big Sky Business Journal. But basically, there's no reason – just like we want to break Montana away from the Ninth Circuit so that we don't have California judges deciding Montana cases, why should we be paying insurance rates based off of a model that includes California? That doesn't make any sense. And yet that's how oftentimes partly why insurance rates are going up so much in Montana, right?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly correct. What happens is for the risk pool for these national insurance companies, Montanans, because we have such a small state population, is that our insurance customers get thrown into pools with customers out of California or Colorado. And as you know, what's happening in those two states is there's huge catastrophic risk because of poor land management policies. And so Montana customers end up paying for losses in other states when we shouldn't be doing that. And that's one of the things that I'll be looking at as your incoming insurance commissioner, is to see what we can do to protect Montana customers. But one of the things we can absolutely do off the bat is this wildfire risk modeling that the insurance companies use to determine wildfire risk and to set premiums in Montana, I believe, is flawed.
Yeah, I totally concur there, because that's partly where California might be thrown into the mix and thrown into the equation with us as well. And so that, and then, of course, you've had massive inflation. So hopefully with the election of Donald J. Trump, getting our economy back up and rolling, lowering inflation, because inflation has been a major factor in insurance rate hikes as well.
That's correct. Absolutely correct. I mean, you know, the more the federal government spends money that it doesn't have, the higher the cost for Americans to live goes up. As we talked about, you know, during the campaign, you know, the average Montanan is spending $11,500 more just to maintain our lifestyle. That's outrageous.
Well, there were a couple of other topics I was going to maybe cover today. One, I've got some interesting data about the number of Montanans who weren't born in Montana, some interesting numbers on that front. Plus, the Montana Shooting Sports Association has some great ideas for bills to be introduced this upcoming legislative session. I'll save those for tomorrow's show. James Brown, again, congrats on your big victory. 30 seconds to go. What else do you want to tell folks across Montana?
I would just thank the citizens of Montana for their strong support of my campaign and for what I stand for. As you know, Aaron, what I ran for was to keep Montana, Montana, and to protect the Montana way of life. And I think, as you stated, with the high numbers that the Republicans statewide candidates received in this election, Montanans agree with that. We did receive a mandate from the people of Montana that they just want common sense in their government. They don't want woke policies. They don't want government to be some kind of fundamental change agent to change the way that we operate in this state.
All right, well said. James Brown, congrats again, and thanks for your time. Choosing the